We'll get to that in a bit, as well as the Blazers tonight, NBA playoffs, a little bit of pucks. Nick will explain why it's his fault the Sharks lost last night. But right now, we'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and welcome in the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Check it out online, ducksports.com, registerguard.com. You can also grab a copy of the paper and check the sports section, a novel concept. Follow along on Twitter. The handle's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, happy Tuesday to you. How are things?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. Last Thursday, you wrote an article, The Ruling by Track's Governing Body, regarding Olympic 800-meter champion Caster Semenya, who was deemed to have a competitive advantage because she has high testosterone levels. So, in general, if I'm correct, the powers that be actually acknowledged this is discrimination, but because they feel it gives her an unfair edge, they justified the ruling?
Yeah, I think your understanding of it is more or less correct. This had been an ongoing fight between Caster Semenya and the IAAF. It had gone to a global sports arbitration court that was making a ruling on basically whether the IAAF could put rules in place requiring athletes like Caster Semenya, who produce testosterone at a certain level above what the typical female threshold would be, to require those athletes to take testosterone suppressants in order to compete in women's events. Boy, it's just a really complicated story. And it's one of those where if you think you've got it all figured out, you probably haven't looked at it closely enough, because there's so many angles to think about. And yeah, and you could tell that the arbitration court was conflicted too, because as you said, they essentially acknowledged that this is discrimination to require an athlete to undergo this this medical treatment in order to compete, but they also found that the IAAF was justified to require that in the interest of having a level playing field.
You know, again, this was not a case of an athlete trying to pull a fast one, so she's not eliminated from competing. You wrote about it. What are her options, be it a medical method that can make her eligible to, you know, be in these competitions she's been all her life?
Yeah, she could she could take a pill to reduce her testosterone level. But she's said pretty emphatically that she's not going to do that. And of course, you can't blame her. Who would want to do that? You know, who would want to undergo a treatment that's not medically necessary in order to compete in a sport that, you know, by all rights, you should be able to compete in? So I think you have to come away from this feeling, most of all, empathy for Caster Semenya, who, you know, has sort of become the face of this this question globally, and there's certainly a lot of hardship that's come with that for her. So you feel badly for her. Have watched her compete at Hayward Field through the years. Certainly one of the most accomplished athletes in the world in her event. So it's a sad situation. I'm not sure there's a good answer, but I do just feel badly for her, because she's in a very tough spot.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. Let's get to softball. Obviously, it's been a trying season for the Ducks. When last season ended, people couldn't wait for this season. Then there was the departures, the coaching change. Everybody knows the story. But you covered the Marist connection, Missy Dore, the coach. So for folks who might not have caught what you wrote on Twitter or in today's Register Guard, explain kind of the dilemma she and her family are facing with a potential recruit that I would say is kind of near and dear to her personally.
Yeah, it's always been an interesting connection with that Marist softball program and with the Ducks, because, you know, Lauren Burke was a star player at Marist who went on to sign with Oregon. You know, Mike White had connections with Marist, had coached there a little bit before he became the coach at Oregon. So, there's historically been a connection between those two programs. And right now, Marist has two of the top softball recruits in the nation, Ariel Carlson, who's a senior who's already signed with Oregon, and then Abby Dorr, whose mom, Missy Dorr, is the coach at Marist and was a former Oregon softball player herself about 20 years ago. So just a ton of connections. And on top of that, two players who transferred out of Oregon, Alexis Mack and Maggie Ballant, are helping out with Marist this year as volunteer assistants. So there's tons of connections there. And it has created kind of a complicated situation because Abby Dorr had committed to Oregon when she was in eighth grade, but with the coaching change now has decided to consider some other school.
Yeah, so she's considering, as we talk with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. And what could you tell us? I think you just mentioned it in passing. One of the Marist players who is just an absolute basher, she is committed and, in fact, is looking forward to playing here at home.
Yeah, Ariel Carlson has signed her letter of intent to play for Oregon next year. I asked her if she had any second thoughts about that after Mike White left, because she was another player who committed really early to Oregon. She was committed as an eighth grader, which used to be kind of how it works in softball. They've changed the rules since then to where coaches can't contact players until their junior year. But it used to be that all that recruiting happened really early in softball. So I asked her if she had any second thoughts, and she said that she really really connected right away with Melissa Lombardi. She liked the idea of coming in and being one of the players who helps to rebuild the program. So I think she's going to be probably a player that becomes a fan favorite for Duck fans, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities for her to come in and play right away next year.
One general question I often ask you about compelling stories. I know you've made a wager or two at a sports book in Vegas. So Saturday was the Kentucky Derby. For the first time ever, the winner was disqualified. Is that an event you pay attention to? Because, you know, I'm just curious as to, like, Austin's level of engagement. And it is an iconic American sporting event.
Oh, Steve, it's been a while since we had to pull out the list of iconic sports events that I pay no attention to. But we got to get it out today and add the Kentucky Derby to that list. I feel that familiar sense of guilt when I have to admit to you that there was this huge sporting event that happened on Saturday that I paid zero attention to. What was I doing on Saturday? Gosh, I'm trying to remember.
It's a long
what
time
I was
ago.
Doing on Saturday that kept me from watching a single second of the Kentucky Derby. But I'm sure it was something really compelling, like going to get my groceries or something.
I always say that when people feel bad about missing a TV show or a sporting event, I'm like, you want to know something? I think if that's the worst thing you ever do, your life's probably going in a good direction, so I wouldn't sweat it. Let's.
Well, you know, in my line of work, there is a certain expectation that you're paying attention to sports, and I really do try, but there are certain sporting events over the course of the year that I just don't have. I don't have the bandwidth to follow, and unfortunately, the Kentucky Derby tends to be one of those.
All right. Well, you know, they have devices now where you can catch up on things you've missed. I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
So not only am I a bad sports fan, but I'm also technologically illiterate. Is that what
I know, by the way, Nick is like, coming from the 58-year-old guy, that's a joke. But and anyway, let's go to basketball. We know softball got impacted by transfers. In recent weeks, we've seen a couple of hoopers leave the Ducks. Victor Bailey, whose playing time really evaporated. Miles Norris, who I thought his role would grow. So, like you wrote, what's the deal here? Are role players just not willing to stick it out if they're displeased? What do you make of those two cases?
It kind of seems that way, doesn't it? And if you look around the country, the trend in college basketball, guys come in, and if they're not playing right away, a lot of them are looking to enter the transfer portal and go somewhere else. I think one of the hardest things to do in college basketball is sign a top 100 recruit like Miles Norris or Victor Bailey, and then convince those guys to be patient and wait their turn. Because when you come in as a fairly highly regarded recruit, a lot of those guys have the expectation that they should be playing right away. And it's hard for them to take that long view and want to take the time to develop when sometimes that's what they need. You know, you could see the potential with Miles Norris. I really liked his game as a freshman. I thought he showed a lot of potential. He was just really raw, and you could tell that he needed time to develop. But, hey, yeah, it's hard to blame those guys, though, because you're only in college for 4 years. It's your only chance to prove yourself worthy of being drafted. And so if a guy looks at the situation and says, I'm not going to be able to play until my junior or my senior year, if then, it's hard to blame those guys for wanting to look for a better situation.
Raw, by the way, is a good description. I would say about half of the people who contacted me via text or on Twitter are like, man, he was raw, but I couldn't wait to see what he grew into. So I guess you're going to have to follow another program. A couple final thoughts for Austin Mika, the registered guard. So the Pac-12 announced after an eternity of 18 conference games that now they're going to 20. I thought the sarcastic tweet about after last season, you were like, well, after watching the Pac-12 last year, I'm not sure we need two more games. But what do you make of this decision to increase the amount of conference games?
Well, I meant that was my first thought. It's like, man, watching 18 Pac-12 games last year, at the end of that, I was not saying we need to see more of this for sure. But I understand why they did it. It does make sense from the standpoint that the Pac-12 has clearly fallen behind the other major conferences in men's basketball. They've got a big issue with basketball that they've got to fix, and they're trying to figure out how to do it. And one of the things they're trying to do is get the strength of schedule better. So if you swap out two games against Northwestern State and Sacramento State, and you plug in a couple Pac-12 games, you know, that strength of schedule looks a little bit better. Now, it's not going to be a cure-all by any means. There's a lot going on with Pac-12 men's basketball right now that's not going to be fixed just by playing a couple more conference games. And sometimes the trap you fall into is, you know, you think it's about your schedule or you think it's about this and that and the other, and actually it's just about you guys got to get better at basketball. I think that's the bottom line for the Pac-12. But if this takes them one small step toward that, then I guess it's fine.
And lastly, the story from last week's Oregonian that I missed, thanks for the heads up, Oregon Athletic Director Rob Mullins might be in the mix to replace the departed Scott Woodard at Texas A&M. I think overall Rob's done a great job, and, you know, everybody will find imperfections, but has Rob commented, and when you consider the conference and finances, how attractive is that Aggie post?
Well, you can see why it would be attractive to an athletic director in the Pac-12 for sure, because a school like Texas A&M and the SEC has a lot more money coming in from the conference than Oregon does in the Pac-12. And if Rob Mullins did take a job like that, I think that would be the reason, is that it's just getting harder and harder in the Pac-12 to compete with these schools from other conferences who are starting to pull away in terms of resources. I made a couple calls today, and the sense I got is that people at Oregon would be pretty surprised if Rob Mullins takes this job, but you can understand why Texas A&M would be interested in him. I agree with you. I think he's done a good job at Oregon. There certainly have been things that you can look back on, you know, like the Mike White situation, some of the instability Oregon's had in football. No AD is going to have a perfect record, but overall, you know, I think Rob Mullins has done a nice job stabilizing the ship, basically, at Oregon and sustaining success in a lot of their sports. So you can understand why he would be on the radar of a school like Texas A&M.
Yeah, folks, check it out. I mean, some of the financial numbers are like, oh! That is attractive. Folks, he is Austin Mika, the Register Guard, registerguard.com, ducksports.com, on Twitter, at Austin Mika RG. Austin, always appreciate you getting us rolling on a Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll catch up next Tuesday.
All right, same to you, Steve. Thanks.
Take it easy.